18.
Hey, who, yo?
Lopin shouted.
I was wrong about this monster resembling the women you caught. It actually looks like you in the mornings, before you've had your onachala.
A leg speared down near Lopin, tossing up chips of rock as it struck the ground.
Acts like you too,
Lopin said, lashing himself backward. Mostly he was keeping the beast's attention. He wanted it focused on him and Huyo, not the sailors. Indeed, because of Huyo's efforts earlier, it looked like only one sailor had been seriously injured so far. Fimkin was trying to bind the man's wounds while the rest had grabbed an extra stock of spears from the rowboats. The men proved adept with the weapons, throwing them to try to stick them in the creature's eyes. One got close, bouncing off the carapace right near an eye. The thing roared and reared up, a giant pink-white tube of death covered in carapace. Though the dozen or so arms seemed spindly by comparison, they were thick as tree trunks. They alternated between trying to spear Lopin and trying to swat him from the sky. Lopin wiped his brow, then ordered the sailors to back up farther ashore. Unfortunately, while the creature seemed like it belonged in the water, it was mobile enough on the shore to be dangerous, using its legs to scoot along, slug-like. It turned toward the sailors again, so Lopin buzzed in close, Rua at his side, and drew its attention. He tried spearing the thing in the head near the neck, but his weapon bounced off. The monster was bulbous like a grub, but far better armored. Damnation! Lopin lashed himself and wove between its swinging arms. Ha! At least it was slow-moving like a grub. The thing could barely... Wham! Lopin ended up sprawled against a boulder, upside down, ribs screaming as they knit back together with stormlight.
Radiant Lopin, Kistled said, ducking in close. Are you all right?
Feel like a piece of snot, Lopin said, groaning. Following a sneeze.
He peeled himself off the rock and flopped down next to Kistled.
My spear can't get through that thing's carapace.
We need a short blade, Kistled said. Can't you summon one?
Afraid not, Lopin said. It's political.
Nearby, Huyo was drawing the thing's attention, but his stormlight was waning.
Don't get eaten again, Lopin called. But if you do, try not to get sneezed out. It's awful.
Political? Kistled asked.
You've got to say these words, Lopin said. And I said them. Because they're good words. But the Stormfather, sure, he has no sense of style.
He glanced up at the sky.
This would be a great time, O blustery one. I will protect those I hate. I've got it, you den goncho god thing.
No response. Lopin sighed, then shouldered his spear.
All right. So who you and I will try to lead it farther inland? Then you and your sailors, sure, you grab those boats and try to get to the ship.
We can't let it follow us to the Wonder Sail, Kistled said. A great shell like that could sink the ship.
Yeah, well, then we need to all retreat and try to lead it inward. We can maybe take shelter in the buildings inland.
What if, in running, we encourage it to move out and attack the ship?
We'll just have to deal with that if it happens, all right? Huyo and I will distract it. The rest of you prepare to retreat up to the fallen city.
Kistled hesitated, then nodded. Lopin lashed himself into the air and shot toward the thing. Maybe if he could get in close while it was focused on Huyo, he could stab it real good. He also needed to give Huyo some more stormlight. Lopin had plenty, sure, in his pouches. He flew around behind the thing, but it seemed ready for this. It kept shifting, keeping one of its beady jet-black eyes toward Lopin while it slammed its arms toward Huyo. Huyo shouted at it, fortunately drawing its attention.
There,
Lopin thought, preparing his spear. He got in closer. When it glanced toward him again, he'd lash the spear directly into its eye. Lopin felt a sudden chill. A coldness began at his back, right between his shoulder blades, then washed through him. Cold enough that it made him jerk upright, stunned, unable to move as he felt something leached from him. His stormlight. He managed to spin in the air, trying to swing his spear and attack. But it was too late. He glimpsed a swarm of small kremlings flying behind him, different from the one Rissen had as a pet. Smaller, maybe the size of his fist, and more bulbous, the 24 creatures barely managed to hang in the air. But their feeding had been enough to drain him. As he dropped through the air, he felt panic. They'd gotten his pouches, too. There was nothing left to suck in. He hit. Hard. Something snapped in his leg. The monster undulated toward him, opening its awful maw and glaring with those terrible eyes. It seemed eager as it raised its arms to smash him.
"You were there when I met Navani Kurlin," Rissen said to Nickley. "You know she isn't the type to be easily dissuaded."
"The mother of machines."
Nickley said it like a distinctive title.
"Yes, we are aware."
"You tried to scare away her windrunners when they investigated this island," Rissen said. "So she sent a ship. What do you think will happen if that ship vanishes mysteriously? You think she'll give up? You'll see a fleet next." Nickley sighed, then met her eyes.
"You assume we don't have plans in place, Rissen," he said.
He seemed genuine. Though he was made up of monsters inside, he appeared to be the person she'd come to know during their travels. "Your plans so far haven't worked," Rissen said. "Why would you assume one to scare off the Radiant's will?"
I wish you'd taken our bait," he said. "Some of us wanted to sink your ship as soon as it breached the storm, but we persuaded them. We told them you'd be happy with the gem hearts. You were supposed to also locate a little stash of maps and writings from long ago. We would have made sure you found it before leaving. Once you returned to Queen Navani, you'd have discovered that the gem hearts were fake. The writings would prove to be the remnants of an old pirate scheme from the days before this place was surrounded with a storm. You'd have learned those pirates used legends of treasure to lure people to Akina, that they'd spread fake gemstones on the beaches to draw their marks in and distract them before attacking. It would have been so neat, so easy. With those stories in hand, everyone would dismiss the legends about riches on Akina. They'd leave us alone. No one would have to die, except...
except there's an oath gate here," Rissen said. "They'll never leave it alone, Nickley."
"They will think it destroyed," Nickley said. "After what must regrettably be done here to you and your crew, some of us will imitate sailors. Your ship will limp back to port, and we will tell the story. A storm that cost too many lives while getting through it. A fight with a strange great shell. A destroyed oath gate. Fake gem hearts. Everyone will leave us alone after that."
"Damnation. That might work." But Vestim's calm voice seemed to whisper to her from across the ocean. This was her moment, the most important deal of her life. What did they want? What did they say they wanted? "Storms, I'm not ready for something like this," she thought. "You'll have to do it anyway." She took a deep breath. "You truly think you can imitate my ship's sailors well enough to fool people who knew them? You use a body with tattoos, I assume to hide the seams in your skin. You don't quite know how to act Thalen, so you imitate a foreigner. You actually think this subterfuge will work? Or will it instead spread more mystery?" Nickley met her eyes but didn't reply. "That's been your problem all along," Rissen said. "Each lie you spin makes the mystery more entrancing. You want to protect this place. What if I could help you?" Rissen's mouth had gone dry, but she continued holding the creature's eyes. No, Nickley's eyes. She had to see him as the person she knew. That was someone she could talk to, persuade. He might be some nightmare from the depths, but he was still a person, and people had needs. They were interrupted by footsteps at the door. Cord stepped in wearing the breastplate, which she'd apparently managed to power. Indeed, her fist glowed with gemstones she'd found. On one hand, she looked somewhat comical, wearing only half of the armor. Her exposed head and arms seemed child's size, with the rest of the plate in place and functioning. Yet her solemn expression, the way she slammed the butt of a spear down beside her, Rissen found herself bolstered by the young woman's determination. Cord said something loudly in her own language.
"We may speak in Vaden," Nickley said, "so Rissen may understand."
"Very well," Cord said. "I challenge you. You must duel me now to the death."
"I think you'll find I cannot be defeated by a mortal," Nickley said. "You don't know what you're asking."
"Is that a yes?" Cord bellowed.
"If you insist."
"Ha!" she said. "You have been tricked, God. I am Hualinam Lunanakiakilu, the daughter of Numuhukumakiakiaya Lunamor, the Falala Likino. He who drew the bow of ours at the dawn of the new millennium, heralding the years of change. If you were to kill me, you would be violating the ancient pact of the Seven Peaks, and so must now forfeit the battle."
Nickley blinked in what seemed like a very human show of utter confusion.
"I have no idea what any of that means," he said.
"You don't?" Cord asked.
"No."
"Excuse me."
She hurried over to Rissen, each footstep clanking on the stone. She knelt.
"Are you well?"
"Well as I can be," Rissen said. "Cord, I think they're going to kill everyone to keep their secret."
"They don't seem to know about the ancient treaties," Cord whispered. "And in truth, those treaties were made with other gods. I had hoped the gods who sleep not would be similarly bound, but now I am not certain." She looked down. "I am no warrior, Rissen. I wish to be one and have claimed this plate, but I haven't trained to fight. I don't know if these gods can even be fought. In the stories, you must always trick them."
"I would rather," Rissen said, her voice loud enough for Nickley to hear, "simply reach an agreement. Surely they can be persuaded."
"Perhaps," Cord said. "The gods who sleep not are guardians of life. They seek to prevent its end. Use that."
Rissen studied Nickley. He and the others could have killed her by now, but they waited. They were willing to talk. They said there was no solution. But if that were the case, why was she still alive?
"Is Cord right?" Rissen asked. "Are you protectors of life?"
"We," Nickley said. "We have seen the end of worlds, and vowed never to let such an awful event happen again. But we will kill the few to protect the many if we must."
"What if I could provide you with another option that didn't involve murdering any more people?"
"We tried," Nickley said. "We did everything we could to frighten you away."
His skin split along the seams as if in agitation.
"The storm has protected this place for centuries. It is only recently that it weakened enough to let people through. But
We are committed, Risen. By now we've killed hundreds.
And you've never wondered whether your method is flawed? Yes, you could create another fabrication. But will it work? Or will more of the truth seep out? Will you end up with people swarming this island? Coming ever closer to the real secrets? The ones you hide in these caves? You say you wish to protect life. But if you continue on your current course, you're going to have to kill Cord and me. You are going to kill Knights Radiant. If you truly are sorry you have to take such desperate actions, don't you owe it to yourself and the Cosmere to sit and at least see if there's another way? She turned her hands up, again signaling her desire to begin a deal. Nickley glanced at his two companions. One barely made an effort to appear human. Her skin split at wide seams, and kremlings crawled up and down her body. Neither gave a response Risen could understand, though the unnerving buzzing surrounding them grew louder. Finally, Nickley stepped forward, and, to Risen's immense relief, sat at the table.
Lopin managed, barely, to roll out of the way of the arm that speared down at him, but his foot screamed in pain and flopped awkwardly on the end of his leg, causing him to see stars and blink away tears. So many pain spren crawled around him that he could have started a storming parade.
"Please, gods of the ancient Herdazians," Lopin whispered, "don't let me get killed by a monster that looks so stupid. Please."
The sailors shouted, throwing spears that bounced off the creature, trying to distract it from him. Lopin attempted to push himself up onto one leg to maybe hop away, but it was way too painful. He could barely crawl. And storms. He didn't know any one-legged Herdazian jokes. He flopped to the stones as the thing roared and turned fully toward him. Somehow it knew that a Radiant was a better feast than those sailors. Either that, or it was captivated by Lopin's majesty. His lying on the ground crying his eyes out, all bloody majesty. So, maybe not. Rua tried to urge Lopin on by taking the shape of an axe-hound. He bounced around, worried. Huyo dropped out of the sky directly in front of Lopin, spear in hand, but his glow faded. Had the things drained him too, or had he run out normally? Lopin waved for him to go, to run for it with the sailors. But he stayed firm. Stupid chull brain. He stepped squarely between the monster and Lopin. As it reared to swing, Huyo looked right at Lopin, then turned toward the oncoming spear leg and set himself.
"Huyo!"
Lopin cried. His cousin exploded with light. A blast of something frigid washed over Lopin, and he found himself disturbing a large frost pattern on the ground in the shape of a glyph. As the creature's arm reached Huyo, mist appeared in the man's hand, forming the biggest, most awesome shard hammer Lopin had ever seen. Huyo slammed it with all his might against the monster's arm, and the carapace cracked and split, spraying violet goo across the stones.
Nickley winced. "What?" Risen asked.
"Your friends fight very well," he said.
"They're still alive? You haven't killed them?"
"We have the captain and the crew on the ship, held captive," Nickley said. "I persuaded the others to wait to put them down until I'd spoken to you."
He held out his hands.
"How does this usually proceed?"
"I am the one initiating the trade," Risen said. "So it is upon me to make an offer."
"You have nothing that we want."
"You want to find a way to avoid killing," Risen said, keeping her voice steady. "I can help you."
"Wrong," Nickley said. "We wish to avoid losing control of a force that could destroy the Cosmere. That is what we want, though we do desire to accomplish it with as little suffering as is reasonable."
"Then I can help you," Risen said. "You want to create a fabrication that others will believe? I will be far better at that than you would be. Both Queen Navani and the Thalen Council will respond better to me telling them that Akina was a trap than they would to someone like you.
Except that requires me to trust you with a secret too dangerous to let escape, Nickley said. Besides, the crew that remains on the ship saw my kind. The sailors will have to die, even if we come up with an accommodation between us.
No, Rissin said.
You have no position from which to...
I will not give up the lives of the captain or any of my crew. That is not negotiable. They are my responsibility.
Nickley lifted his hands to the sides as if to say, I told you there was no accommodation to be made. It was unnerving how, in the gesture, each of his fingers came free a little, revealing the insectile legs beneath. Rissin couldn't help staring.
What? What are you? She found herself whispering, though she probably should have stayed on task.
I am like you, Nickley said. Your body is made up of tiny individual pieces called cells. My body is made up of pieces as well.
Kremlings, she said.
As I and my kind are not native to this planet, we prefer the term hordlings.
And one of them is your brain? She asked.
Many of them. We store memories in specialized hordlings, bred for the purpose. Cognitive facilities are shared across many different members of the swarm.
He waved his fingers, and again the different little kremlings, no, hordlings, separated.
It took my people 300 years of selective breeding to achieve hordlings capable of imitating human fingers. And still, most of us are terrible at pretending to be humans. We don't have the mannerisms, the thoughts. I am younger than the others, but am more skilled at using these things. He regarded her. I have come to understand humans a little, Rissin. I like talking to you, being with you. Though I love your kind, even I am persuaded as to what must be done. Our impasse cannot be resolved.
No, Rissin said. There is a way.
She forcibly made herself use the careful, reasonable tone her Babsk had drilled into her.
You say that the sailors have seen you. This can work to our advantage. The best fabrications are mostly true, and having many witnesses corroborate what I say will help.
Nickley shook his head. Rissin, there are forces in the Cosmere that we can barely identify, let alone track. Evil forces, who would end worlds if they could. They are hunting this place. Now that the ancient guardians of Akina are all but extinct, we sleepless must protect it. For if our enemies locate it, they could cause the deaths of billions.
He waved toward the mural.
The Dawn Shard is... He stopped. Then he squinted. Then he leaped to his feet. Winged hordlings crawled out of his skull and flew through the air to land on the mural. They scrambled across it and were joined by hordlings sent by the other two.
What have you done? Nickley bellowed.
It was unnerving to watch him speak with his head split in two, one of his eyes crawling across the side of his face.
What have you done?
All I did was look at it and...
Nickley moved suddenly, all conversation abandoned. He reached across the table and grabbed Rissin by the front of her vest. Cord cried out and tried to strike at him, but his body split into pieces before the blow, and individual hordlings began crawling up her arms into her armor. Others swarmed over Rissin as the man became the monster. He was going to kill her. She didn't know what she'd done, but it clearly meant the end of the negotiations and the beginning of her execution.
In the midst of this, a low, rumbling roar shook the cavern.